Headlines. Sudan's capital is the scene of fighting for 6 days in a row between the army and the RSF paramilitary group. The Israeli regime has approved plans to build nearly 3,000 new settler units in the occupied West Bank. And Ukraine's president calls for more advanced Western weapons as the NATO chief visits Kiev. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Renewed gunfire rattles Sudan's capital, Khartoum, as intense fighting between the army and the paramilitary group known as the Rapid Support Forces enters its sixth day. Explosions and gunfire were heard around Khartoum International Airport and the army headquarters, as well as neighboring cities of Omdurman and Bahri. Over 300 people have been killed so far. Also, millions of civilians have been hit with power cuts and water and food shortages. Sudanese medics have also warned of a catastrophic healthcare situation in the capital, where many hospitals were reportedly caught in the crossfire. The deadly conflict erupted on Saturday, after weeks of tensions over the planned integration of the paramilitary group into the regular army. Attempts for a humanitarian ceasefire failed on Tuesday and on Wednesday. The Israeli regime has approved plans to build nearly 3,000 new settler units in the occupied West Bank. Media reports say the regime also plans to build 240 units in an ongoing settlement project north of Al-Quds. Israel has already allocated large sums of money to build roads and infrastructure in the settlement areas. According to Israeli media, new projects aim to connect existing West Bank settlements and to attract new settlers. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry slammed the Israeli plan, calling it an imperial move, and says it amounts to a declaration of war. Israel has stepped up its settlement expansion since the formation of a new far-right cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. That's in defiance of international outcry and UN Security Council resolutions. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law and the Fourth Geneva Convention. Earlier, Professor of Political Science at Brzezinski University, Saad Nimmer, joined us with his take on Israel's new plan to build more settler units in the occupied West Bank.
We are talking about two issues here. The one issue is the reaction of the international community. So far, the international community is condemning and say this is illegal, but in reality, they don't do anything practical. They don't take measures against Israel to punish them for violating the international law regarding the settlements. And hence, then the Israeli, who are supported totally by the Americans, who said nothing about these settlements, definitely they are to go ahead with multiply these settlements and building new units and enlarging existing settlements and turning the outpost into an official settlement.
In recent years, Iran has made great headways in manufacturing a broad range of indigenous military equipment, particularly drones. Now the Iranian Defense Ministry has delivered 200 drones to the different divisions of the army. That's part of a strategic agreement on the promotion of drone power and the equipment carried by the unmanned military aircraft signed last year. Our correspondent Mahdi Abbasian reports.
Iran's defense ministry has made mass delivery of new combat and reconnaissance drones to Iran's army in a ceremony attended by Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Gharayi Ashtiani, as well as the commanders of different divisions of the Iranian army. With the goal of increasing the power of the drone fleet of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army, 200 new indigenously built drones were delivered to the ground force, the navy, the air force, and the air defense force. Minister of Defense and Armed Forces Logistics of Iran hailed the country's advances in drone production, saying that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence.
The more powerful the Islamic Republic's deterrent power, the better it can help countries that seek security and stability in the region. Certainly, Iran can help them because its military prowess has contributed to providing peace and stability in the region, and the drones that were delivered to the armed forces today are part of the country's defensive power. This trend will continue.
Iranian experts have made giant strides in boosting defense power by producing various equipment, including different types of drones.
Iran's drone program has become a significant deterrent in the region due to the country's ability to conduct combat and reconnaissance missions using these UAVs.
Also, Iran's army commander, Major General Abdulrahim Mousavi, highlighted the growing power of the drones used by army units.
With different ranges, sizes, and weights, these drones can perform all kinds of missions for the Islamic Republic of Iran's army. The experience of using drones in new battlefields has shown that they have a significant and decisive effect. This enables the Iranian army to have the upper hand in the battlefield.
The Navy will have a drone range of 2,000 kilometers with the addition of these drones to its fleet. This means that our operational radius will increase significantly. And in addition, due to capabilities of the drones, we can stalk and hunt subsurface targets such as submarines.
The ground forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army itself is a manufacturer of UAVs. We built drones in different scales, from large to small. They can have strategic effects on the battlefield. In general, drones are a unique and effective weapon and can improve our country's combat power.
There has been very good cooperation with the Defense Ministry. We do appreciate all their efforts. These are operational drones that will definitely be effective in improving the operational power of the Air Force. We plan to use UAVs and planes with a single central command to engage targets.
The delivery of 200 new drones to the Army is part of an agreement with the Defense Ministry on the promotion of drone power and the equipment carried by the unmanned military aircraft. Last year, the Iranian Defense Ministry and the Army signed a strategic agreement. On their phase one of the agreement, the Defense Ministry has undertaken to equip the Army with 1,000 drones.
Iran says its navy has forced a U.S. submarine to move away from the proximity of its territorial waters in the Persian Gulf. The Iranian Navy commander, Rear Admiral Shahram Irani, said the American submarine was approaching Iran's territory while submerged. He added that Iran's Fateh submarine detected the vessel and forced it to surface by carrying out maneuvers. According to the commander, the American craft, identified as a nuclear-powered guided missile submarine Florida, eventually had to leave through the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. has not yet commented on the incident. Earlier this month, the naval units of Iran's army identified and warned off a U.S. spy aircraft after it entered the country's borders near the Sea of Oman. More than 85 people have been killed and hundreds more injured in a stampede in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Women and children are among the dead. Over a dozen of some 300 injured are in critical condition. The stampede took place during the distribution of charitable donations on the final days of the holy month of Ramadan. Hundreds of people had crowded into a school to receive cash handouts. Yemen's Interior Ministry said that the organizers of the event have been detained and are being questioned. The impoverished nation Yemen is embroiled in an 8-year war launched by a Saudi-led coalition. Tens of thousands of people have been killed due to the war. Drought and blockade on the country have also pushed millions into hunger. Earlier, our correspondent in Sana'a, Yusuf Mowry, joined us to give the details of the incident.
This was one of the wealthiest businessmen in Yemen who held this event, and he holds it every year, last week of Ramadan. And, unfortunately, this was a tragedy that happened 8 hours ago because of the poor organization and coordination. The Ansar Allah movement is blaming the organizers for not coordinating with local authorities, but they're also, more importantly, blaming the Saudi-led coalition. According to Muhammad Ali al-Houthi, this tragedy happened simply because the people who were at this charity event, they've had their salaries cut for 8 years. They haven't had any source of income. The country has been besieged by a Saudi blockade that has prevented people from having access to put food on the table. Most, millions and millions of Yemeni people, they lost their jobs, they lost their source of income, which is why you had this area being crowded with so many people.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has urged the visiting NATO chief to help his country with more advanced weapons to fight with Russia.
I addressed the Secretary General with a request to help us overcome the reluctance of our partners regarding the delivery of certain weapons, namely long-range modern aviation, artillery, and armored vehicles. Delaying the appropriate decisions is time lost for peace and the lives of our soldiers who have not yet received the life-indispensable defense tools.
Zelensky made the comments during a joint press conference with Jens Stoltenberg, who offered NATO solidarity with Ukraine. Stoltenberg is on his first visit to Kiev since the start of Russia's military offensive in Ukraine. The Western Military Alliance has already given its full backing to Kiev since the war broke in February of last year. The U.S.-led NATO has provided Ukraine with weapons worth billions of dollars and is due to make more such deliveries. Meanwhile, Zelensky also asked NATO to allow his country to be a member of the alliance.
I also recognize that President Zelensky will raise the issue of membership of security guarantees, and this will be high on the agenda of the meeting and also in the lead-up and the preparations for the Vilnius summit.
Stoltenberg also said the alliance would ensure that Ukraine prevails against Russia. Moscow has repeatedly warned against Ukraine's bid for the NATO membership. It says that preventing Kiev from joining the Western military alliance remains one of the objectives of the war. The NATO is bound by the principle of collective defense, in which an attack on one member is considered an attack on all. South Korea says its decision on whether to provide Ukraine with military aid depends on Russia's actions in the conflict. In a statement, the presidential office said Seoul would change its stance beyond humanitarian aid if there is a large-scale attack on civilians in Ukraine. The military aid will be against South Korea's long-standing policy against providing weapons to countries at war. But on Wednesday, President Yoon Suk-yeol said that his country might consider military aid to Ukraine if there is a situation the international community cannot condone. Russia warned that such moves would make Seoul involved in the conflict and threatened to reciprocate by sending weapons to North Korea. Recently leaked U.S. intelligence documents show that Seoul is under constant U.S. pressure to supply ammunition to Ukraine. Political analyst John Busnish joined us earlier from Belgrade. He told us why the U.S. has turned to South Korea to provide Ukraine with weapons.
Why is it that the United States is looking to South Korea for this matter? Number one, we can see that the EU is not conforming with U.S. wishes to send weapons as fast as or in as sufficient quantities that they want. Number two, France is working around the back of the United States with China. And number three, Ukraine is not seeking these weapons for defensive purposes, but to start a major offensive because they don't have enough artillery shells to make a massive attack on Russia. So we can now deduce from all of these facts that the Ukrainian offensive is still at least 1 month away because they need the shells for artillery and they're having severe problems raising the necessary weapons to make this attack. South Korea has a massive, and I mean massive, stockpile of the shells needed to use in the existing equipment of the Ukrainian army. Now, that means that South Korea has to take from its own stockpiles, theoretically weakening its own defenses. But remember, South Korea is an occupied U.S. military protectorate. So any debate that we are seeing in the media on this subject is simply a matter of push and shove to see who gets what in return for conforming to orders. Because if the United States says jump, South Korea usually responds with, how high?
Police have clashed with protesters in the U.S. city of Akron, Ohio, after a grand jury refused to indict cops involved in last year's shooting death of an African-American man. Videos circulating online show security forces use chemical sprays and other weapons to disperse the crowd. Police tried to break up the protest, calling it an unlawful assembly. Demonstrators are angry at a grand jury decision to not press charges against the officers, who, according to them, mistakenly shot Jalen Walker 46 times last June. Walker's family now says that they will file a civil lawsuit against the city in the upcoming months. That's the same path the family of Tyree Nichols, who was killed by U.S. police early this year, has decided to take.
Today, we announce a $500 million landmark lawsuit against the Memphis Police Department and the city of Memphis for the torture, savage, brutal, dehumanizing, extrajudicial killing of Tyree Nichols.
Nichols' attorney also said that the lawsuit is meant to send the message to other cities that brutalizing and terrorizing black people will be wrenchingly expensive. Nichols was beaten to death by five officers in January after he was stopped for a traffic violation. Police killing of African Americans has been a hot-button issue for a few years now. Such incidents usually draw mass protests across the country, with people calling for an end to decades of systematic racism. Protesters also took to the streets in the U.S. city of Kansas to demand justice for a black teen who was recently shot and injured by a white homeowner. 16-year-old Ralph Jarl had knocked at the wrong door while trying to pick up his younger siblings. Several EU legislators are warning provoking China at the behest of the U.S. would prove economically disastrous for the 27-nation bloc citizens. Relations between the EU and China have deteriorated since the beginning of the war in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes has more from Brussels.
It is clear that greater cooperation between China and friendly nations is making many Western leaders nervous. Analysts say U.S. dominance is being eroded and a new world order is taking shape. The subject of EU-China relations has just been debated in the European Parliament.
The Chinese Communist Party's actions have now caught up with its stated ambitions and the hardening of China's overall strategic posture over the last years.
A clear majority in the European Parliament claim Moscow and Beijing have malign ambitions.
Russia and China have the same goal, to destroy the development of the democratic world, because democracy is a threat to both regimes.
There are those, however, who warn against provoking China. Western leaders always turn to sanctions when they disagree with a foreign government, but they are personally insulated from the impact, experts point out.
They are well paid. Do they feel the blowback of the sanctions? Do they know what is going on in the shops? Do they know that people like you and me are constantly overcharged with all kinds of goods?
A number of lawmakers are urging EU leaders not to follow the US down a destructive path.
US financial capital wants to make profits in China and in Europe. And driving a wedge between the EU and China is a good way of going about it for them.
Trade between the EU and China is currently valued at 2.3 billion euro per day.
According to many economists, ordinary EU citizens will pay a huge price if the 27-country bloc falls into line with the anti-China agenda that is being developed and promoted by the United States. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And that does it for this edition of World News. It's good to have you with us. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Germany's Verdi trade union has called on workers in the security areas at Dusseldorf, Cologne and Hamburg airports to walk off their jobs on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. German national broadcaster Deutsche Welle has covered this story and tells us more. The German trade union Verdi called for all-day warning strikes on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April, for employees in several areas of Dusseldorf, Hamburg and Cologne-Bonn airports. The strike begins on the night from Wednesday to Thursday and ends on the night from Friday to Saturday, Verdi said on Tuesday. The sectors to be affected include the aviation security area, passenger control, personnel and goods control and service areas. Longer waiting times or even flight cancellations are to be expected due to the strike, the trade union warned. Hamburg Airport said all departures would be cancelled or take place without passengers on Thursday and Friday due to a strike, with around 80,000 passengers likely to be affected. Arrivals will still be possible, it added. The reason for the strikes are negotiations between the union Verdi and the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, on time bonuses for night shifts, Saturdays, Sundays, and work on public holidays. Workers are also fighting for a better collective agreement on overtime pay for security and service staff at commercial airports in Germany. Despite the recent strikes, there has been no breakthrough so far. A written offer by the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, was insufficient, the union stressed. Work at airports must become more attractive in order to be able to keep aviation security specialists and recruit new ones in order to avoid longer waiting times for holidaymakers, Verdi representative Wolfgang Piper said. We call on the BDLS to finally present a negotiable offer in the negotiations on 27th and 28th of April in order to avoid further strikes and to end the conflict before Pentecost, he added. Warning strike at Deutsche Bahn is planned for Friday, 21st of April. Meanwhile, German media reported that further warning strikes were also planned at Deutsche Bahn and other railway companies in the next few days. An exact date is not yet known, but according to media reports, there was talk of a strike this Friday, 21st of April. The Railway and Transport Union, EVG, wants to announce this Wednesday how it will proceed in the wage dispute with Deutsche Bahn and around 50 other companies. At the end of March, the union, together with the Verdi Services Union, called for a major strike nationwide, which affected airports and ports in Germany, in addition to buses and trains. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. A German union on Tuesday announced that it will launch a strike at several airports on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April, amid an ongoing dispute over pay and working conditions. In a statement on its website, the Verdi union said the 48-hour strike of security staff at Dusseldorf, Hamburg and Cologne-Bonn airports will begin in the early hours of Thursday morning and continue until midnight on Friday. Passengers were warned of possible flight cancellations, delays and longer waiting times at these airports. The union is demanding an increase to overtime pay and surcharges for work on weekends, public holidays and during night shifts. The latest round of negotiations between the union and the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, ended without an agreement last week. We call on BDLS to finally present a negotiable offer during the negotiations on 27th and 28th of April in order to avoid further strikes, Verdi's representative Wolfgang Piper stressed. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story. Two German labor unions representing transport workers called for mass strikes that are expected to cause widespread disruption on railways and airports in Germany and cause travel chaos throughout the country. The strikes are prompted by wage disputes. The strikes, scheduled to start just after midnight on Thursday night and affect services throughout Germany, will be the latest in months of industrial action and protest that have hit major European economies as higher food and energy prices hit living standards. The Verdi Union is negotiating on behalf of around 2.5 million employees in the public sector, including in public transport and at airports. Railway and Transport Union, EVG, negotiates for around 230,000 employees at Deutsche Bahn and various bus companies. Verdi is demanding a 10.5% wage increase, with pay rising by at least €500 per month, while EVG is asking for a 12% pay rise or at least €650 more per month. We represent groups of workers who literally run this country and are paid far too badly to do so, Verdi's chairman Frank Wernicke said. Deutsche Bahn and other public employers are offering around a 5% wage increase on average, along with a one-off payment of up to €2,500, generally below inflation, which was 6.9% in 2022, and is expected to slightly ease to 6.6% this year. We don't want any further escalation. We want a negotiable offer, said Martin Burkert, the chairman of the EVG union, which represents workers at 50 transport companies, including railway operator Deutsche Bahn.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And in this very brief series of three lectures on these last days and nights of the month of Ramadan, the plan was to go over supplication number 45 of Imam Zainul Abidin wa Sayyid al-Sajidin alayhi salatu wassalam, the supplication which he read to God, which he made, actually not read, but he made this prayer and plea and petition to God at the end of the month of Ramadan to say farewell to it. The next part of the dua, the Imam says something very beautiful. He's a man of beauty as it is, right? So every word he utters is a word of beauty. But he says, so we bid farewell to it, meaning that we bid farewell to Ramadan, this wida that we're doing. You know, we have the Jummatul Wida He says we bid farewell to Ramadan as well, with the farewell of one whose parting pains us. We have we have the azadari in Muharram. Imam is saying we have azah over the parting of the month of Ramadan from us. Just as we cry over the parting of Imam Hussein alayhi salam from us, we cry over the parting of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam when we mark his martyrdom or his death in the month of Safar. When we cry and lament over the separation between us and Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, Imam Sajjad says, you know what, I have a state of azah, a grief of Ramadan, the month of Ramadan leaving me. And he says, we bid farewell to this month who's leaving us, fills us with gloom and loneliness, the gham and the wahsha. The Imam uses these words, the ghammana wa, he says, you know, I have that sadness over the gham and the wahsha that we'll feel, the loneliness, the sadness. He's really showing us, brothers and sisters. And I said this, you know, last night, that he's at a different level because of the way he sees the month of Ramadan. It's not, as I see it, as a chore, a taxing burden on me to eat at strange times, to sleep at awkward times, to engage in acts which are not normally done. The Imam is looking at Ramadan in a different light. But look at how he says goodbye to the month. You know, and there are so many ways that we, you know, when we look at it at a personal level, if you had a close friend or a beloved family member and they were going to leave you to go to another city, maybe they're leaving Vancouver to travel to another part of British Columbia, or they're leaving BC to go to another province, or they're leaving BC to move to another country, how would you say goodbye to that person? How would you part with them? How would you bid them farewell? You might walk to their car. You may drive them to the airport. You'll go to the last part before they go into the security area of the airport, and you'll be right there to see them off. But sometimes you may have a person that, okay, you know them well. They're a friend in the mosque or from work or colleague, and they're leaving the business or they're leaving the company. They're moving. And you'll have a farewell party for them at work, and you'll buy them a gift, and then that's it. You won't go to the airport. Or maybe you may even have people who you don't even really care about. I mean, they're a part of the society, but you're not attached to them, that you really worry about them, where they're moving. So they move, okay, big deal. You know, another person gone. Or you go to the grocery store, and you're dealing with a cashier, and you pay your money, and you leave with your bags and your groceries. Yeah, you're saying goodbye, but you have no emotional attachment to that person. They're just there doing a service to you. So my point in giving you these examples is, what is our relationship with Ramadan? Is it like our relationship with the cashier at the Walmart or the department store? We're just there for a few minutes, do our transaction and leave. Was that our relationship with Ramadan? Or was it, no, like our... like a close family member or friend who's moving to another part of the world, and we're going to, you know, drive them to the airport. We're going to carry their bags for them. We're going to help them check in. We're going to see them right off to the last stop in the airport before we can't go any further. How are we dealing with the month of Ramadan as it came, as we were in it, and as it now leaves us after 29 or 30 days, is the question that I pose to you. And I pose to myself, first and foremost, hand on heart. How am I going to say goodbye to Ramadan? Good riddance. You're gone. You're done with. Tired of you. 30 days. You stressed me out. What a waste of my time. What a waste of my life. I could have been sleeping. Could have been enjoying food and the normal times of the day. Or do we actually feel the parting of Ramadan from us? Like a close friend leaving. Or like a family member going on a trip that we may not see them again. You know, the Imam then goes on to say that this month is a month in which we owed it it had a claim above us. It had an inviolability. It had a hurma to it. There's a sanctity to Ramadan that we had to observe. And it had a haq, a right that we had to give the month. You know, just as people around us have rights, you know, in Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, in his beautiful work, the Risalatul Huquq, he talks about the rights of our family, the rights of our religious scholars, the rights of our body parts, etc. He says that the Ramadan, the month of Ramadan, had a right over us, how we treated it, how we respected it. It's not a human being, right? The Ramadan, the month of Ramadan, is not a human being. But the Imam is showing us a very unique aspect of the Islam, that it's almost as if it has taken on a life form, how you bid it farewell. Did you respect it? Did you honor it? Did you cherish it? Did you fulfill the rights that the month has over you? And I'm coming to the end for tonight. I'm going to finish in about the next 7 to 8 minutes. But then the Imam begins a very beautiful farewell bid to the month of Ramadan. And again, I'm leaving a lot out, brothers and sisters. So please, I apologize. But again, you can look at this on your own and read and reflect on the lines. I just want to highlight certain passages that really resonate with me that I hope will resonate with you as well. So the Imam then says, فَنَحْنُ قَائِلُونَ. So we are those people who say to the you, O the month of Ramadan, As-salamu alayka ya shahra Allah al-akbar, wa ya eeda awliya'ihi. Peace be upon you, O greatest month of Allah, and the festival, the Eid of His friends. Now he's saying goodbye to Ramadan, but he's calling it the Eid of the awliya. We haven't gotten to Eid yet, you know, it's still early. But he's calling Ramadan the day of Ramadan the period of Eid of the friends of Allah. Now there's a lot to unpack in here. I'm going to try to see how much I can do in the next 5 or 6 minutes, you know. But one of the things the Imam is showing us here is that we greet the month by saying Assalamu alayka ya shahr Allah al-akbar, for example. But don't you and I normally greet people? You might have fish at home. I don't know if you're like me, who talks to his guppies in his tank. But do you go up to your fish tank and say, Assalamu alaikum, ya goldfish? Assalamu alaikum, ya, you know, whatever fish you have? Do you say salam to your hamster at home, or your kittens, or your budgies, or your parakeets? Most people don't talk to their animals, although Rasulullah would often do that. And, you know, there are stories about the Prophet and his interaction with animals, but we don't normally talk to animals. And we surely don't say salam to an animal or a wall or a tree when we go in the hiking in the forest. We say, you know, assalamu alaikum, yeah, beautiful redwood tree in Stanley Park, and give it a hug. We tend not to do that. But here the Imam is showing us, he says, assalamu alaikum, ya shahr Allah al-akbar. Greetings be upon you, O the greatest month of God. So we greet the month of Allah, Shahrullah, Shahru Ramadan. We greet the month of Ramadan, the month of Allah, the month of the Ummah, with Assalamu Alaika. Peace be upon you.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to experts, frequent mass shooting incidents in the United States create a sense of insecurity for the American people and force the U.S. public to purchase more weaponry to supposedly maintain their security, a vicious cycle that keeps on producing more violence. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The U.S. national broadcaster NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. Former U.S. President Donald Trump says mass shooting incidents are not a gun problem as he vows to defend and expand gun ownership rights in a speech to the main American gun lobby's annual meeting. Donald Trump said to an audience at the National Rifle Association's NRA's meeting on Friday, 14th of April, in Indianapolis, he said, "I was proud to be the most pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment president you've ever had in the White House." Donald Trump added, "And with your support in 2024, I will be your loyal friend and fearless champion once again as the 47th president of the United States." A plethora of 2024 Republican presidential hopefuls and possible candidates rushed to pledge their loyalty to the National Rifle Association before several thousand gun rights activists in a hall at the convention center in Indianapolis, against the backdrop of recent mass shooting incidents in Tennessee and Kentucky. The Republicans ridiculed the notion of gun and ammunition restrictions would reduce violence. Former President Donald Trump said, "It is a scandal and a tragedy that year after year, Democrats in Washington continue to hold common sense school safety measures hostage to their radical gun control agenda, which in virtually all cases would do nothing to prevent attacks by demented and disturbed individuals." As he batted cleanup for a long list of Republican officials and office seekers, he claimed, "This is not a gun problem. This is a mental health problem. This is a social problem. This is a cultural problem. And this is a spiritual problem." The website Politico has also covered this story and tells us more. Mass shootings have become commonplace in the United States. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there has been 146 incidents so far in 2023, the most at this point in the year since 2016. The non-profit group Gun Violence Archive defines a mass shooting incident as four or more shots or people killed, not including the shooter. According to data published on Tuesday by KFF, a non-profit research organization formerly known as the Kaiser Family Foundation, one in five American adults report having been personally threatened with a firearm. Democrats and gun safety activists have argued that the passing stricter laws would reduce violence, whereas Republicans and gun rights advocates argue that arming teachers in schools would act as a deterrent. The United States, a country of around 330 million people, is awash with some 400 million guns. Efforts to ban assault rifles have faced opposition from Republicans, who are staunch supporters of the constitutional right to bear firearms. A Gallup opinion poll from October of 2022 showed a majority of Americans are in favor of gun control laws, with a 57% majority of all Americans saying they want stricter laws covering the sale of firearms. In the wake of the recent mass shooting incidents, some Republicans have changed their tune. Republican Governor Bill Lee publicly urged the Tennessee state legislature to pass a version of a red flag law in the state. That's a policy former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence once embraced when he was governor of Indiana. But as a potential presidential contender today, Mike Pence said America doesn't need gun control, but rather crime control. Mike Pence added, "We don't need lectures about the liberties of law-abiding citizens. We need solutions to protect our kids." So to Joe Biden and the gun control extremists, I say, give up on your pipe dreams of gun confiscation, stop endangering our lives with gun bans, and stop trampling on our God-given rights guaranteed by the United States' Constitution. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. After two mass shooting incidents killed people in Louisville, Kentucky and Nashville, Tennessee, political leaders recently called for tighter gun control laws, including tougher laws preventing people in crisis from accessing firearms. Recently, a bank employee shot dead five colleagues and wounded nine other people at his workplace in Louisville, Kentucky. On 27th of March this year, 3 9-year-olds and 3 staff members were killed at a private Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee, by a former student. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee urged Central Assembly members to find a compromise to bolster the state's so-called red flag laws, aimed at making it more difficult for people deemed to be a threat to the public or themselves from having access to firearms. The Republican governor of Tennessee, Bill Lee, told reporters on Tuesday, 11th of April, "I'm asking the legislature to bring forth thoughtful, practical measures to do that, to strengthen our laws, to separate those dangerous people from firearms, while at the same time preserving the constitutional rights of the people of the state." Such legislation would supplement an existing law allowing courts to bar perpetrators of domestic abuse, sexual assault, and stalking from owning or possessing firearms. Tennessee's Republican Governor Bill Lee's call for cooperation followed the Republican-dominated Assembly's expulsion of 2 black Democrats who staged a protest in the Tennessee state capitol calling for tighter gun control laws. The governor also said he would sign an executive order requiring local courts to report criminal records to state law enforcement within 72 hours, a measure aimed at more effective screening of those purchasing guns. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee called on the legislature to separate those dangerous people from firearms, while at the same time preserving the constitutional rights of the people of this state. He made the call at a news conference in Nashville on Tuesday. Meanwhile, at a news conference in Louisville, Kentucky, U.S. Representative Morgan McGarvey urged federal lawmakers to support universal background checks. The Democrat said that during his time in the state legislature, he worked with conservative colleagues to introduce laws that would help temporarily remove firearms from people in crisis. U.S. Representative Morgan McGarvey pointed out that the Louisville shooter could have been flagged as a risk, citing reports that the man legally purchased the assault-style rifle he used on 4th of April and texted or called someone to tell them he was suicidal and contemplating harm before carrying out the shooting. The congressman, Morgan McGarvey, said, we don't have the tools on the books to deal with someone who is an imminent danger to themselves or to others. Mayor Craig Greensburg said at a news conference that the recent shooting incident brought the number of people killed by gun violence in Louisville to 40 in 2023 so far, calling the level of firearms violence in his city beyond horrific. The Democratic mayor, Craig Greensburg, noted that under current Kentucky law, the rifle will one day be legally auctioned off, and urged state lawmakers to allow guns used in the deadly shootings to be destroyed. He said, "The laws we have now are enabling violence and murder." According to Kentucky State Police, any person aged 21 or older who is eligible to lawfully possess a firearm can carry a concealed deadly weapon. Addressing the audience at the recent National Rifle Association's meeting, Donald Trump promised, if elected president again, he will roll back existing gun laws and arm teachers and put security guards at the entrance of every school in America. Donald Trump said, "I will ask Congress to repeal totally ineffective legislation that makes it harder to protect our schools and easier for criminals to face absolutely no opposition when they go in a school."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in Imam Ridha alayhi salam's shrine on the occasion of the beginning of the Iranian New Year 1402. That's March 21st, 2023. The enemy's attack is on religious and political beliefs. They want to create despair in the youth. Despair means reaching a dead end. When a young person loses hope in the making progress, when they lose hope in the future, they feel as though they have reached a dead end. You cannot expect a person who feels deadlocked to work properly. They want to spread discord. They want to create bipolarity in the country. They want to take the real software of the country's national power from the hands of the nation and make it ineffective. This software consists of people's faith, people's religious values, people's national values, people's beliefs. When they do these things, they seek to create instability and insecurity in the country, or, if they can, even a civil war. However, they have, and they always will, hit a brick wall. In hybrid warfare, the enemy uses the media, cultural elements, security elements, infiltration, and economic elements. It uses all of these elements to besiege the nation and create despair among people and make them forget their own potentials. They try to separate the nation from the means by which they can receive information. Well, we have the tools to inform people, but they create pessimism in people.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
They say, don't listen to the radio and television. Their news is fake. Their news is fake. Don't pay attention to the reports made by officials. Their reports are fake. Don't listen to the words of the leader. The leader's words are repetitive. For years, the enemy front has loudly declared that they want to bring the Islamic Republic to its knees. But in response to this, the leader says, you can't do a damn thing. This is not repetition. It's steadfastness. Almighty God has commanded us. His command to the Prophet is a command to everyone. It is a command to us. So be steadfast just as you have been commanded, you and whoever has turned to Allah with you. The Holy Quran, Surah 11, verse 112. This is steadfastness. It is preserving and keeping the truth in one's heart and standing by it. This is not called repetition. Thank God the people are awake. They have stood up. They are involved in things. Our dear people have demonstrated this throughout the years. The Iranian nation dealt a heavy blow to all those who supported or provoked the people in the recent riots, and by God's power, the nation of Iran will continue to strike blows at the enemy in the future.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.